Hi everyone, Ian here. I'm hoping you've had a couple of good weeks since the last webinar. I'm here to answer any questions that have been sent in during the last couple of weeks. And for those of you who don't know how to send them in, it's questions@realestatesuccess.com.au. That's questions@realestatesuccess.com.au. So the questions have come in tonight. I will start with, obviously, I am a plumber and builder by trade. I have been a Dimpner student since 2008, and in that time have replaced my income, and I help her out now with training. So anything that you hear tonight is of my opinion and my learnings. What you need to do is make sure you go off and you seek qualified advice from those professionals that have that are around that Dimpner provides for you, so that you can ensure that what your understanding of your current situation, because everyone's situation is slightly different. So let me start with the questions that have come in tonight, and we'll go through these questions, and then I'll go back, and there might be questions that come up during the during these questions that come in. Now, tonight's questions are fairly basic, so I am going to run through them relatively quickly. And the reason they are basic is because they're mostly from new students that have just joined, which is great. So welcome everyone that if you've just joined recently. So let's start with this one. Hi there, we are students of Dimpner and we have been for just over a month. We currently have two properties in Sydney, which is a good thing. One of our properties is at Concord, which is a home and an investment property at Randwick. The Randwick property was a PPR. We exchanged contracts on a new property in Toowoomba prior to becoming students of Dimpner. The investment property in Toowoomba will be positive after tax. So let me stop you right there. Positive after tax is not positive. Because if you're relying on your tax to make your deal positive, then you're going to get surprised when you go and sell that deal. Presumably, when people say after tax, it means with the refund and after depreciation. I don't count that at all. You wouldn't do that at work. So you shouldn't do it in your property portfolio. Yes, you do get to claim the depreciation. Yes, you do get to claim the negative gearing. In saying that, though, if it's not positive, it's not positive. If it's a little bit negative, it's negative. And like Dimpner always says, you can't be a little bit pregnant. You either are or you're not. One of the things with depreciation is that people don't realise is that it has to be paid back if you went and sold the property in the long run. And even if you don't claim it, you'd have to pay it back anyway. So, again, that's where the qualified people will come into it. So let's keep on going. This construction with this property is delayed due to zoning issues. Even though we have this in the process, what can we do to continue to invest as we're unsure how much equity we have? Okay, well, in answer to that, you can do no money down deals. You can start doing some research into other areas where you want to invest once this deal is finished and completed. You can revalue your properties to make sure that you've got the most value out of them. So no money down deals, seeking vendors, you know, looking at commercial deals, looking at possibilities of joint venturing if you've got a good skill set. You know, I always say that if you've got a skill set, try and transfer that to property and continue to use it in property because you've got the skill base already. It's just a matter of transferring your knowledge into that area. And there is something in property that your skill set can be used for, down from, you know, washing nappies all the way up to engineers. Number two, also, how do we protect our current assets, the three properties, and will the process be costly? What you need to do is you need to contact Derek from Pacific Law and explain to him what you want to do because they're in your own name. You will have to, if you go back to the three-day boot camp that's recorded, on the first day, on the first morning, Derek actually gets up on stage and Dimpner and Derek go through what they call a contract of will, and that's where you can create a structure to protect your properties that are in your own name. Like Pacific Law can tell you what that cost is and how long it will take you to protect you because there's a clawback time and all the rest that goes with that. So you can straight out sell them, but being in Sydney, those properties are going to be very expensive. They have to be sold at market rate, which means you're going to have to pay capital gain depending on how long Randwick has been out, and also you're going to have to pay stamp duty to move them into a trust. Sorry about my ticklish throat. We told our broker to use the equity for our two properties, not a good idea, to buy the Toowoomba property. By doing so, we're able to keep our two properties under 80%. Being low-risk borrowers and we have two properties at the bank for security, why does the bank insist on making the new property a security addition? Because they want to tie you up. Number one rule that Dimpner says is never, well, one of the number one rules, she's got lots of number one rules. One of the rules is don't buy in your own name. Number two rule is don't tie yourself up. Do not cross-securitize with banks because they control you. So, excuse me. In answer to your question of why does the bank insist on making the new property a security is because they can, because they're controlling you. We spent the weekend with the wholesale club, and one of the developers there was ready to do a deal, and one particular bank who they'd been dealing with for many, many years and were very loyal to them decided that developers weren't getting money anymore and they recalled all their loans. And he said, as Dimpner says, do not go with one bank for all your properties. It's a bad idea. So how do we get out of this situation where they have used all three properties as security so that we can actually invest further and not rely on our current yield and make sure the next step? All right. So why don't we, in doing that, go and have a look at the website. Okay. So on the website here, what you're missing, the person asking these questions, what you're missing is the ability to actually search and find things. I will say number one is your FAQs. Your frequently asked questions. Your coaches have put together a number of frequently asked questions where, come on, I have to log in, sorry, where you've got all the questions that you're asking are relatively well answered in that section of FAQs at the top, if I can finally get it to get there. And there you've got a whole list of questions all the way down to number 67 where your coaches have put these together. They're the most commonly asked questions that constantly get asked about trusts and how they get put together and how do I listen to the webinars and all the websites, all that sort of stuff. On the far right here, you've got support. That's where you can email questions and phone your coaches. You've got their phone number and direct email access there. And if you ask them a question that, like tonight, that's answerable by FAQ, they will send you the FAQ and say, this is where you need to go to. Now, in answer to sorting out your cross-securitization and being with the same bank with three different properties, which it shouldn't be, on your contacts page, you can go there and you can look up the Investor Loans Network, and you will contact. And I would do this before the boot camps start, because when the boot camps start, they get very busy. So there's specific laws for your trusts and stuff set up. And Investor Loans Network here. And Investor Loans Network, you ring them or email them, tell them what you want and that you need a financial health check. They will sit you down and start saying, rightio, we need to start pulling you apart. We need to get you to a different bank for the different properties. And that's what we need to do. What is a necessary due diligence should we do prior to purchasing a cash cow property? Well, there's lots. Well, numbers, number one. You need to know the area. Probably about four or five webinars ago, we did some due diligence, and there is a whole section in your home study package that is around due diligence and gridding and doing all of that. So I would say that you have to go in. You have to know the properties, you have to know the area, you have to know the highs and the lows, you need to know that it's got good tenancies, that there's low vacancies if you're buying as a cash cow. Now, remember that not many straight out cash cow properties exist. You have to create them. So you'll have to find different strategies to turn that around. How can we open our mindset to invest in properties upper and beyond our current equity limit? This excludes any deals that require negotiation, such as money down deals and joint venture deals. Cash cows without any complicated deals. All right. I'm not known at times, Lee and Javine, for my tact. And the simple thing that I can see occurring here is that you're looking for the easy option, and the easy option is to go out there, stand on the street, and some person come along and say to you, look, I've got a great cash cow deal, would you like to buy it? The unfortunate part of that is that sometimes it happens, but very rarely. So you're going to have to get in your head. You're going to have to negotiate. It's part of property. Every part of your life is a negotiation to start with. So you're going to need to get out there. You're going to need to learn your strategies. You're going to need to learn and do your due diligence in areas, and you need to get out there. And every deal is complicated. I've not yet talked to a student who's done great deal where it hasn't been complicated. There's always something that comes up. There's always something from left field that no one ever expects that sort of throws them sideways, and they've got no idea where that came from, but they have to get over the top of it, learn more, and keep on going. So in essence, what you're asking for is the goose that lays the golden egg. And if you can climb that beanstalk, go for your life. Otherwise, you're just going to have to do the hard yards of getting into this game, understanding and knowing what you're doing, understanding the strategies. I always use the analogy about a GP. If you want to become a GP, a medical doctor, you're going to have to do 6 years of study. And then when you've done your 6 years of study, you then stand beside people that are qualified, and you do your time. And then if you wanted to become a brain surgeon, you then have to go out and you have to stand next to a brain surgeon and do extra study. This is what this game's about. What you're doing at the moment is learning to become a GP, and you'll get very proficient at that. And if you decide that you want to spend the rest of your life in simple strategies that'll just tick over deals day after day, month after month, and get your cash cows and your chunk deals, then that's what'll happen. Some of us want to go on and move on. For me, I thought I was happy to be the GP, but then I hit a ceiling where I was a bit bored. So we went on and did other stuff. And that's the, we continue to move on. How do you select directors for a trust company? As the company directors should not be related to you, how do you select these directors? Again, you've got the trust structure a little bit back to front. So what you've got is you've mixed up the settlor and the directors in the trust. So what you've got is a company, a corporate trustee sitting above a trust. The trust has a appointer. The appointer has absolute control over the trust. At the bottom of the trust, you've got beneficiaries. And also in the trust is you have the settlor. Now, generally, I get all the time, I get Pacific Law to set up all my trusts, and they settle the trust for me. So I don't ever intend to marry Derek, and he and my daughters may never marry his sons. I hope not. Well, maybe it'd be a good thing legal wise, but not good for our trusts. And sitting above the trust is our corporate trustee, the company. Now the appointer of the trust is the person that puts the directors in charge of the company. So you would put yourself in charge of the company. So you don't go choosing someone else. So what you need to do is do a little bit more study around that asset protection. Look, it's going to be sound dropping out. Unfortunately, Dimpna's computer, our connection at home isn't the greatest in the world. So I'm in her office, so I'm here doing my best. So that'll happen. We've got our coaches online, and they've told me straight up, I'm fantastic. Michael Franks has said, frequently asked question number 55 is the one you're looking for on that one. Thank you, Michael. Please add in as many FAQ numbers as you can, Michael, as we're going. What are the advantages and disadvantages of the hybrid trust compared with other trusts available, as we can't find this information? Generally, the reason you can't find the information about the hybrid trust is because Dimpna has said that there's a couple of versions of the hybrid trust that are out there, and the ATO is waiting to challenge it. So there'd only be specific reasons that you would use hybrid trusts. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing it for yourself to buy property. You'd most likely be using your corporate trustee and discretionary trust in that. How do you advertise that you're an investor so that people will come to you rather than you go looking for property? Well, people always ask me, where's the best place that you find deals? The answer to that is the best places I find deals now are when people bring them to me. But it's taken me since 2008 to build up a database of people that know and understand that I have a reputation. Now, that doesn't mean a bad reputation. It means a reputation of ringing them on a weekly basis and saying to them, look, it's Ian again. I'm looking at property. Remember, we spoke last week, and I was looking for a property in your area that did this, this, and this. Has anything come up? Or especially, Dimpna and I always talk about third-level questioning. That's the questions to the real estate agents and to the professionals that involve their life, how many kids they got, what sort of car they drive, what they do on the weekends, and become friends with agents. So I can honestly say that I have a huge amount of agents that are friends first, and they bring me deals second. And the fact is that some great deals come our way now, but it's taken us a long time to build that up. So again, it's going to be some hard yakka, some work to get in there and do some work to set up those relationships. Do you set up a separate corporate trust for every trust? All right. Again, that's number 55. But the question should be, do you set up a separate corporate trustee for every trust? Dimpner originally had one corporate trustee over a few trusts, depending on how you did it. She now suggests that you do one corporate trustee and one trust. And for ease, it's a lot easier anyway. You know, you'd be doing ABC Proprietary Limited as trustee for the ABC Trust. And then the next one would be 123 Proprietary Limited as trustee for the 123 Trust. Michael Franks has said that frequently asked question number 66, this is fantastic, is the one that you want for that one. So Dimpner says the reason that Dimpner says to do that now is because in some states you get the tax-free threshold if you have separate companies on top of every trust. Dimpner mentioned to have corporate trustee directors and are not related who can benefit from this. I think you've got a little bit, you have to go back and listen to what Dimpner said. How and where can we find corporate trustees that are not related? And I answered that before too. And, you know, you don't have to find other people other to be directors. Hi, Dimpner. I need some advice regarding asset protection in future. Should I buy property in joint names or through a trust? I live in Auckland, New Zealand. Looking forward to your reply. What I will say is for you, Barani, to send an email to admin@dimpnerboholt.com, and there is an asset protection specialist that Dimpner has over in New Zealand for the New Zealand students, unless Michael does know about the contact details for them. But admin@dimpnerboholt.com will give you you can ask the question there to get the New Zealand specialist that will look after your asset protection over there. I will say definitely that you wouldn't buy in your names if it's an investment property over there as well. Dimpner does continue to say that you should buy in a asset protection structure. Hi, Dimpner. At the moment, I got a trust which I'm using for work as a subcontractor for Telstra. Can I use the same setup for investing in real estate? What will be my option? I'm a new student, so just planning to set up a company. All right. So what you need to do, it's Hanumant, I think. What you need to do is actually speak to Pacific Law and Derek and tell and show him what your trust is doing with Telstra. Now, it's all right to say that you are working through a trust, but I don't know whether you're the personal trustee of the trust. I don't know whether there's a company over the top of the trust. Regardless, whatever you would do, the last thing you would do is actually try and buy a property in that trust, because you're trading in that trust. And if you're trading in the company above the trust as well, it's very, very dangerous. So you keep your business matters separate to the company and trust structure that you'll be buying a property in. For example, when with our structure, we have a development company and trust, and nothing happens in the company, everything happens in the trust. So our development trust pays me a wage. And my development, I go out and work on the other properties which are owned in other trusts, and then our development trust will actually bill for the work that I've done over there back to my development trust, and so we've got money exchanging happening in different ways. So definitely, and then we have a separate trust which has our vehicles in it, so excavators, trucks, you know, anything that I will rent out to the other trusts or I rent them to the development company who goes and use them on the other places. So I then have those separate as well. So for you, you might consider, and again, Derek's the guy to talk to, you might consider that there's some value in your equipment. So you might want to put that in separate trust. The trading part of it, you might want to leave in that trust and make sure it's correctly set up. Okay. Hi, Dimpner. I need to ask you about changing zones, so I presume you mean rezoning here. There is a house and a large block of land in Adelaide surrounded by a few offices and other commercial buildings. The price is good, $385, as nobody is interested to do residential development in the spot, too busy street. But as commercial, fantastic. I know you are not keen on Adelaide. Well, no, what Dimpner says is a deal is a deal. It doesn't matter where it is. You can do a deal anywhere in Australia as long as you've got your due diligence done and you're gridding right and you know what you're doing. Neither am I, but borrowing my ability is restricted and I need to do one more small project and cash cow before I move to another state. Can you please give me some advice? All right, so I presume asking about rezoning from a residential to a commercial. If it's surrounded all the way around it, then I would say that you would have a good argument to say in to the local council that you want a you want to do a commercial building on there. You might do a part residential. I love resi-mercial buildings. I love the fact that you've got a part commercial, part residential building. They're great returns and they're great for income. So you might consider that style of development. So councils do like to see a transition of zoning. That, you know, sometimes you've got one house that finishes on residential and then next door's commercial. Sometimes if you can do a mixture of the two, the council will be happy. In the case of actually applying for a rezoning on the land, well, that's hard yards. It takes, you know, I've not seen anything happen in less than 4 or 5 years because it has to be approved by state government usually. So the local council will, you can apply to local council then has to go through all the channels to get through the state government to ask for that rezoning. So I would, you know, to rezone it would be very difficult to, as long as you can find in the planning scheme. And the easiest thing is to talk to a private town planner. A private town planner in the area will tell you what your possibilities are on there. And they will give you great feedback, some of them for free, some of them you'll have to pay. So my first point of call for you would be to make sure that you go and talk to a private town planner in the area that knows their stuff and then ask them the questions about the highest use of the property. What is the best and highest use of the property so that you can then do the numbers around that? Like I said, if it's net around commercial buildings and you can do residential, combine the two and do a joint one. I think that'd be a great idea. Okay, I like this question. We are interested in your thoughts on this one. We have just exchanged on a property on Sydney's northern beaches where we live and are torn as to whether we should tell our friends. Whilst they know we already have two houses here plus a few elsewhere, we feel telling them we have just bought another on the northern beaches will change the friendship. While most of them rent, live in a unit, or are struggling paying the mortgage on their houses, we don't think they want to hear we have bought another house here. By the same token, we are excited about it and its development potential, which we then are building for ourselves, which we'll have to lie about for the whole time, saying we are building for someone else. Plus, when it completed, we can't show anyone. Okay, that's an ego thing. We feel, though, it is probably best kept to ourselves. If we had purchased property interstate or bought shares, we wouldn't be telling our friends the details. It's just the right here makes it difficult. All right, let me start from the top. If your friends can't handle the fact that you're actually becoming wealthier and wealthier and they don't like you for it, then they're not your friends. If they do like you for it, they're going to ask you, how do you do it? What are you doing to make it better? You know, the fact that you can, the fact that you feel that you can't tell them because you think that that's going to be bad, well, that's a you issue that you can't tell them. And if they've got a problem with it, that's a them issue. You know, one of Dimpner's great mentors has told me, what other people think of me is none of my business, right? So if they can't handle it, they're just going to have to move on. So they can either stay around, hang on, and be part of what you are becoming, or they can move on and stay where they want to be. Now, I know that there is a number of acquaintances, I would call them, that I still go and see, old neighbours around Sydney and all the rest when I go back there. They're not my friends, though. And this may sound callous. You think differently. When I go back and I sit with them now, I listen to their story and you listen to what that's going on in their life, and they haven't moved, they haven't changed, they're stuck in that position. You've got this great ability to move on and be so much more, and you continue to be more. You've got three properties in Sydney in the Northern Beaches. Like, what else would you like? Do you really want to be held back because someone else might think that that's no good for you? You know, I'm going to start a page, Tall Poppy Australia, which, you know, it shouldn't be wrong for us to be wealthy. It shouldn't be wrong for us to be successful. Yet we feel bad. we feel bad. I'm just reading a comment here about showing people our wealth. You know, if you drive a Ferrari down the road here in Sydney or in Brisbane or wherever, and people look at you and go, what a wanker. You go over, sorry, I said swore that. Don't tell people. No. You go over to America and you drive Ferrari. And you go, man, you're unreal. Wait, how did you do that? Tell me about how you did it. You know, so I would insist that you tell everyone the truth to start with, that you're doing this deal. And, you know, the reason Dipner and I continue to do what we're doing is because it makes change. It changes people. Now, if it means that you can go and make a change, Jennifer, and then friends see the change that happens with you, go on. This is fantastic. That's what it's all about. I'm just reading a comment from Lee that says Mexican crab syndrome. I love it. I'm just looking at the responses here from other people, and they're all saying very similar things to me. So very true, Ian. The best thing we have done is move from where I grew up. Unbelievable the change. Yeah, and small country towns are some of the worst, you know. And look, in the end, like I said, we still have acquaintances. We still talk to people. We don't ever say to them, we're too good for you, because that's not the case. You're no different to me, and you're no different to your friends. The only difference is that you take opportunity. And, you know, I think that's a fantastic thing. You know, we won't go into politics, but look, what I'm saying to you is tell them about it. Tell how fantastic it is, the deals that you're doing, and why you're doing them. You've got yourself into this position, not them, and they can either be alongside you and want to be and achieve like you have, or they're going to be bitchy and carry on. So let them go. Let them go off and be in their own world. In regards to commercial loans, what interest rate should we expect to pay on a commercial loan? Usually, at the moment, about 1.5 to 2% more than the residential loans. And what sort of fees on approximate $2.5 million? Okay, that's where you need to go and speak to your investor loan strategist. Have a sit down with them, and work through that with them. Because that's what they do. That's their job. That's what they have to do. Bryce said, why don't you invite your friends to a one dayer? See what difference it makes. It'll be too good to be true, no doubt. Hi there. I'm still relatively new in reading through the material, but I'm still unclear on one major thing. If I use the equity in my PPR to invest and the banks only consider 70 to 80% of rental income for investment properties, where does the 20 to 30% gap come from borrowing? Yet, I realize in reality it should be positive cash flow and later not an issue, but for borrowing sakes, I assume it comes from your personal income borrowing capacity. That's correct. So they will take the fact that you've got a income and that will top up for the loan of the rental income. Now, remember, though, if you've got technical cash in the deal, then they're only worried about making sure that their costs are covered on there. So therefore, do you have to max out your PPR loan to leave some room for investment borrowing capacity, and how to work this out? Again, this is the strategist sitting down with you and making sure that you know. Or is available redraw line of credit considered cash for future loans with other lenders? Yes, it is considered cash for future lenders. They don't know where you're getting from. They just know that you've got cash. I realize this would be a case-by-case basis as all situations are unique, but I'm just unsure how it really works. Yep, all they want to know is that you've got cash to settle the deal, and they'll give you a 70, 80% or 90% loan depending on what you're going. I went and saw my bank manager, and they suggested my borrowing capacity was almost double of what Investor Loan said. I'm wondering if Investor Loan has factored in future multiply loan capacity. I've asked Investor Loan, but it's been a week with no reply. Okay, well, if you had a week with no reply, I would be asking Investor Loans every day. This is a business that you need to qualify. You need to get your professionals on your side, and you need to manage your managers, right? So you need to be ringing every day and saying, I asked you a question, you haven't answered me. Politely, not rudely. Can you answer the question? I can answer the question in part. Yes, Investor Loans are looking after your future investment strategies. Now, Investor Loans might also be saying, rightio, you're going into this deal and you're going to be subdividing or strata titling or whatever, and we need to protect the fact that in the future we need to go back and ask for another loan. If you went and saw your bank manager who currently has your home loan or other loans with that bank, then, yeah, they'll give you more, but they will be tying you up and you won't have any flexibility in that. So, again, I would be asking Investor Loans continuously for the answer that you have not got yet. Hi, and I just bought a splitter block in Brisbane in the council area. The current house is to be slid across the block and sold. Fantastic. I'm about to commence speaking with builders for a buy and hold on the new block. You've mentioned previously that you should consider building a dual OC even if planning doesn't allow dual OC living yet. The Brisbane City Council appears to be right against dual OCs, granny flats at present. Is there any other law in place that can allow multi-family living, or what are the rules? What a property should look like contained for illegal multi-residents? Thanks, Jennifer. Okay, so when it comes to dual OCs in the Brisbane City Council area, no, they don't want them. Know that Logan has just switched across. Ipswich has just got ancillary buildings. Sunshine Coast has ancillary buildings. Moreton Bay has ancillary buildings. Toowoomba has ancillary buildings. Northern Territory has ancillary buildings. WA has ancillary buildings. New South Wales has ancillary buildings. So do you see a trend happening here? Brisbane City Council are missing out on a massive amount of contribution or headworks charges, and they will soon come online. I can guarantee you that within the space of a year or two, they will start to accept that these dual OC living arrangements will be in place, and then you'll be legally allowed to rent with two separate tenants. For now, though, a dual OC will give you so much more flexibility in the type of tenant that you can attract. So the type of tenant you're going to attract with a dual OC living component is, so let me firstly establish what the dual OC is. A dual OC has to be designed, and this is the way I see it, that you walk through the front door, you end up in a foyer, you've got a door on your left that goes to a self-contained area with a wet bar in it and no cooking facility, okay? So you've got a bar sink, and then you walk straight, and then the next door straight ahead goes up to a 2, 3, 4 bedroom, whatever you want to make it, okay? Now, for me, if I was designing in Brisbane, I wouldn't be designing the separate little living area any more than 50 square metres, because you never know what they're going to come up with, and I've not seen anything smaller than 50. I know that Ipswich has gone to 50. So 50 square metres is the maximum I would do. And I would also make sure that it was a fire-rated box at the time, because when it comes to getting approval, you're going to need to fire-rate it. So for now, though, the flexibility of the tenant that you will get will be a family with grandparents, a family with teenagers, a young couple that can't afford to pay the mortgage if they buy the property, but they will put a lodger or boarder to rent by the room in that separate area, which will help them pay the bills. You'll get siblings, grown-up siblings that have been married and they're two sets of couples, they will rent it. You can read up on the Rental Tenancy Act of the local of the state, and you can also read up on the Brisbane City Council of how many rooms you are legally allowed to rent out by the room as lodgers or boarders, and you then have to look at what the definition of a lodger and boarder is, and I can tell you that changes from state to state and council to council. So I'm not telling you what it is. I do know what it is, but I'm not telling you because this is your job to make sure that you're protected and that you understand that. Know that most insurance companies, once you have two unrelated parties in a property, so an unrelated party is two people that don't know each other, once you have more than two in there, that your insurance is going to have to change, and it's probably going to be double. So there's a whole list of things that you're going to need to know about when it comes to that scenario. So I'm saying build it dual OC simply because I believe that there's going to be a change. At the same token, build it dual OC because you'll get a better rental return generally simply because of the flexibility of that type of property. Hi, Dip. Now, I've committed to new building package in East Newman. They're a 5x3 configuration with media or study. Completion in August 2014. Vacancy rate is still high. My questions are, how do you see Newman in short term, August till December, with the effect of Roy Hill, BHP and Rio? My crystal ball broke long, long time ago when it comes to property and what companies are thinking and doing, especially with BHP. They're making some monumental changes at the moment. And look, what I see, what, you know, the last webinar we did was I threw some graphs up about what I believe is happening in most towns, especially those that are influenced by mining. And look, we can't give you the short term, long term. We can't. We can predict what we think, and really it comes down to you knowing the areas. You need to know about all the due diligence about all the projects that are happening and what is moving in the area and who's renting where. And, you know, I've got a couple of engineers that live out at Newman, so that have worked out at Newman, and they feel that now is not the time for them. That's them, though. Other people are saying, yeah, let's go in. You have bought an end-of-the-line product, so you're not making the most out of that property. Chris, Dimpner always wants you to make sure that you manufacture growth out of your deals. This one here is someone else that's prepared it for you. So you would want to try and make sure it would have been good if you locked in some tenants with this developer if you're going to do it this way, because it'd give you instant income. Medium term, again, we're not sure. Long term, they're producing more iron ore than ever before. And everyone says that this mining boom is the biggest and best ever. Not when you look at statistics. From 94 to 2003, the growth was 10 times bigger than what it was from 2003 to 2014. So, the 10 years previous to 2004 were bigger than the last 10 years. So I think there's plenty of opportunity and movement in the market as far as in the future, and hold if that's the case that you're in, so that you can continue to move on from there. Okay, I'll go into, so right now what I'm doing is I'm going into the questions that are have been come have come in to my come in tonight. I will just read through them. So, hi Ian. My question is, if you could go back in time to when you were first starting out real estate investing, what advice would you give yourself? Well, my first real estate investing advice was never buy negative gearing, because that's what I did. What would I say to myself? I always go back to walking into a seminar and seeing Dimpner at the door and ridiculously asking the question, and I'm so embarrassed by it, ridiculously asking question Dimpner, going, what do I need to do? And Dimpner quite said to me quite simply, you've got all the information, I've given it to you, you just need to put it into action. And I felt so stupid, because I knew that that was the answer. I knew the answer was learn your stuff and go off and have a good crack at it. So the advice I would give myself is learn what you want to do, make sure you've got the numbers to back it, make sure that you're not doing it through emotion, and make sure that it's a business decision and that the outcome is the deal for you. So the number one rule I have for investing now is, if I'm doing the deal that I'm about to buy, at the end of this deal, can I do another deal? And if the answer is no, it's the wrong deal for you. Because people want to go out and they want to do cash cows all day long. Though, like me, before Dimpner, I tied myself into a corner and couldn't move. I was cross-securitized. I bought everything in my own name. It was all negative geared. I thought I was doing everything right. I was a property investor. I had six or seven properties. I was a property investor, but I was worse off than anyone else. I was better off with no properties at all. So, if you buy this property, what can at the end of this deal, can you buy another property? That's really the number one rule that I use. Hi, Ian. I'm doing research on some smaller New South Wales cities such as Orange, Wagga, etc., and would like to find stats on median price information over the long term and having problems. Can you suggest a site where I can get information that covers the last 10 years or more? Yeah, sure. There's a lot of free sites, but I don't tend to use them because I've got paid subscriptions to a few. In Investor, you've got APM, that'll give it to you. In Pricefinder, that'll also give it to you. RP Data will also give it to you. I think that realestate.com will do it. And I'm sure that there's other ways of doing it. There is a lot of free websites that'll do it. But my advice to you would be, if you've got someone that has a subscription to Investor, ask them through to do it through APM, or Pricefinder or RP Data. Hi, and I've got a family trust for property investment. Should I get your referred law firm to review the trust information before buying the next property in the trust? Absolutely. Now, it's going to cost you about 500 or something odd dollars. The last thing you want to do, Audrey, is go and buy a property in a trust that's not going to protect you, especially against making sure that the deeds are correct, that that it stacks up against the last case that got taken to the ATO and won, to make sure that you're correctly established in the trust deed. Hi, Ian. Not sure if you'll get time to answer the question tonight, but thought I would give you give it a go as I just remembered. We have purchased one property in our trust which settled a week ago. We have another property under contract and questioned the accountant and solicitor regarding a need for another trust for the second property. Both have said they believe that land tax is now payable on trusts because they now link trusts with similar directors as corporate trustees. We have not been able to confirm this or outside specialists. Have you heard this or can you point me in the direction of where? Okay, so again, Pacific Law is the way to go. I tried working with my older accountants and legal people. In the end, I gave up. Depending on what state you are in, it's going to dictate whether trust pay land tax from $1 or there is a threshold. So for New South Wales, I can guarantee you from $1, you'll be paying land tax in each trust. It is what it is. In other states, it varies. In Queensland, my understanding is that that you do get the tax-free threshold for every trust. So, yeah, I would get Derek and ask Derek that question. Petson is saying, I'll be Jen's new friend on the Northern Beaches. Absolutely. Why wouldn't you be with three properties out there? Hi, and I have finance approval for up to 500 and access to a line of credit of 200. My goal was to find a deal in Australia to have net annual positive cash flow of 30,000. I wanted to achieve it within 12 months. Am I being realistic to achieve this? I'm trying so hard, but not moving forward. And I wondered if my goal is being unrealistic. Well, yes and no. If you're willing to do the work, if you're willing to learn and you're willing to move forward, then absolutely you can go forward and do deals like that. And one deal will get you your 30 grand. Now, whether that's going to chew up all your funds and all your money and you're not going to be able to do another deal is going to be the question. So let's look at some of the things that would give you 30,000. You could go out and find a commercial deal where you lift the rents in the commercial property and revalue it and get that 30 grand. You could go down and do a rooming house in Victoria, which would be you could probably do two with that sort of money. That'd be low-end properties. That'd be out in regional areas. And you could get someone to manage them for you at 30%. And you would get rent by the room, which is legal down there, as long as it's the correctly approved buildings. And you would do your 30 grand easy, I'd say, out of that, if you've got full occupancy. So, you know, there's lots of opportunities in Victoria. You could go out and straight do a mining town with locked in rent for the next 5 years, but there's not many of those left. And you have to ask yourself what the end result is going to be as far as a value perspective is concerned. You could go into regional New South Wales and do a subdivision style deal and put a granny flat on it and build on the back block and put a granny flat on that as well. Now, would you be able to do that in a deal for your first time? Maybe not, because there's going to be a lot of learning. Could I do that in a year? Probably, yeah. I could do it in probably 9 months because I've done the process before and I've learnt it once before, twice before, however many times. Will you get 30 grand out of that? No, probably around 7 to 15. So in 2 years, after you revalue or you sell down, you could go and do another one. In 2 years, you could do your 30K. Now, that's not to say that if you don't do your homework, you can't end up with a great deal. I'm just about to tell you, and I'm probably going to do a webinar on it, but I'll quickly tell you a deal that one of my students has just done and signed, and we're hoping that the finance will come through in the next couple of weeks. And he went out, he found a developer that was in trouble. He went to the developer and said, you're in voluntary administration, the banks are closing in, and the developer was holding his head in the sand and didn't want to know about it. So what the student did was he said, well, you must have more than one property because I've seen one property that you're in distress. How about we do look at the other properties? And he had a commercial building there, a commercial property that was bringing in $232,000 and he was about to fire sale the property for 1.7. And that's when the student rang me and I said, what's the story with it? He says, well, he's about to sell it for 1.7. I said, well, that's better than 10% return. How about you go back to him, tell him that you'll pay more for it, and tell him that you want to speak to the tenants. So he did that, went and spoke to the tenants. Some of the tenants weren't on the right rate for that property, and they were also not signed up. So the student, this is the student that's got no money, by the way, went in. He lifted the rents from 230 to 310. He's taken that to the banks. The banks have said, yeah, we'll give you $2.2 million, I think it is, $2.1 million as a loan. So with that 2.1, he's giving $2 million to the developer instead of the 1.7. So the developer gets $300,000 more. And he gets to pay the stamp duty out of the money from the commercial building. And he'll probably end up with somewhere around $50,000 income, 30 to 50 grand income. Now, he did that with no money, and hopefully it will come off. That's contracts have been signed. Now, that's a beautiful deal and shows that it is possible. You can do it. Your question is, can you do it in a year? Absolutely. I'm looking at some other students, and a student sent me an email today, which is a beautiful email about the changes that they've made since joining Dipner, and they've gone from negative 16 to positive 20 with a property that's probably going to return them somewhere between 50 to 60 grand. It's going to be an 18-month deal, but it's a fantastic property, you know, and they've done all the research. They're perfect students. They go off and they do everything that's asked of them, and they learn and they come back and they ask questions, and, you know, it's really great. So that's my response. Lee's asking what an ancillary building is. An ancillary building or an auxiliary building is a granny flat. In New South Wales, they call them secondary dwellings. In Ipswich, they call them an ancillary building. In Logan, I think they call them an auxiliary building. So it's just a granny flat, a flat attached to a house. Hello, Ian. I work for local government. When I'm doing the research, is there any way I can protect myself given I have access to a lot of information with my workplace? I do not want to be accused of obtaining information inappropriately. I hope this is not a stupid question. Actually, it's not a stupid question. You do need to protect yourself. The end result is that you will need to look at the fact that you have access to that information, and if you do access it for your own personal good, now you will know whether you're doing it for yourself or not, and the question comes down to you being compliant with yourself. Property is a 100% compliance game, and if you feel that you're actually breaking the rules at work to get information for your personal gains, then I would say that you should be very wary of the fact that you're doing the wrong thing. So for me, you're your only boss when it comes to making decisions around that. 100% compliance is what I go by, and you don't break the rules ever. Dear Ian, how do you find positive properties, please? Do you use certain tools, the search engine as Property Investor, or any other tools? I did not know how to start. I feel my source is limited. Again, the easy answer is you don't go through a website and have this big blinking sign saying, buy me, I'm a positive cash flow property. You're going to have to do the work. In most cases, you're going to have to do something to the property to move it around. Do Dipner and I use Investor? Yeah, we do. There's some great deals that we find on there. And sometimes they're a little bit dated. Other times they're right there, ready to go. You know, I like Gumtree. I like eBay occasionally has, if they sneak through their filters. The thing is, the hardest thing will be your first deal, the picking up the strategy. And once you've picked up the strategy, you just go over and over and over again. And you'll find some great deals in there when you start going to, when you start working out what your strategy is. Now, I started with subdivision, not for me. I know a lot of people that are making great money out of subdivision. It just doesn't suit my temperament. It's not the style of thing that I like to do. We've got a particular strategy that we try and that we've tried and that it's become successful, and we just duplicate that over and over again. And then when I get a little bit bored, I go and try something on the side. And I don't put all my eggs in one basket. So to you, I would say go back, have a look at the material, have a look at the research, make sure that you do look at Investor because it's a great tool for that. And then you'll be able to go there. Michael, your coach is saying go to the download section on the website, and there's some great research information in there that they keep on continuing to update there. Someone just saying that they've got no questions, so that's a good thing. Is there a cut-off age to establish a self-managed super fund and buy properties? I am, you know, I will talk about most things. I will not talk about super. Unfortunately, it's a specialized area. And again, go to your contacts on the website and find and ask Investor Loans or someone around there. If you're in Queensland, you've got Grow Accounting or Feel Accountants. If you're in Victoria, you've got Proctor Major. If you're in Sydney, New South Wales, you've got Investor Accounting Network up at Newcastle. They've got super specialists that can advise you around that. I do know that most people, when they're 65, to set up a self-managed super fund, most financial advisors will run away from you because you're right at the end of your investing life, and the last thing that anyone wants is if something goes wrong for their for them to have been given the advice. Though you may as well ask the question; it's worth asking. I think because super is a great way to buy property. Hi, Ian. Can I set up my trust in Queensland and add my first investment port in New South Wales? Well, again, that's a Derek question. I can tell you, though, if you live in New South Wales and you're buying in New South Wales, that you'll have to set it up in New South Wales. It would be different if you're buying in Queensland, but no, you'd probably, if you're buying in New South Wales and you live there, then you'll have to set it up there. I still remember that you started in Sydney and moved to Brisbane. I asked why you moved, and your answer is because you can. Other than that, is there anything more appealing property-wise? Not really. We invest all over the country, so it doesn't matter where we are. The reason I left Sydney was because I sort of had enough of the rat race, and in the benefit of hindsight, I probably would have moved a lot earlier. It's just that I, you know, the security of the TAFE job and all the rest of it was the reason that I didn't move. But once I had left work, I realized that we didn't need to be there anymore. Hi, Ian. When would we expect modular houses to be available in New South Wales? Well, hopefully I can sign the agency agreement this week and they'll be available. I'm just and we'll have some display models sent out in the next 3 or 4 months. So I'll let you know. Ian, I've been off the radar for a while. Given today's approval of the Galilee Basin for Adani, what do you think that means for Bowen? I would say that the approval of the Adani mine means that obviously that they will start to go ahead. I don't think anything fantastic about the Galilee itself out near Alpha. I think they're going to put most of their workers into camp out there. It may have a spray-on effect to Collinsville because the rail has to go through there and all the rest of it. For Bowen, I think you're still looking, you know, at 18 months plus, probably closer to 3 years before anything starts to turn over there. So, yeah, I Bowen will have its time. It's picking that time. And, again, with investment, whether people are pulling back right now or not, I've got no idea. Ian, in the scenario I mentioned earlier, this current purchase, does raising the house and building a one-bed flat under the house fall under the ancillary building? Ancillary building, you're talking about a Brisbane City Council thing, and I'm talking about different councils. So don't go taking my information about granny flats from one state or one council to another council. You can't go doing that. Can you lift the house and build underneath it? Yes. Can you build it so that it will be approved down the track? Yes. But right now, if you can't do it in that council, you can't do it. But you can build for the future. From Pierre, who's got a little deal out at Western Sydney, we finally got our DA approval for our triple block in Western Sydney, 16 months after our original complying development approval, which turned out to be invalid. Interesting, that, isn't it? Anyway, I wasn't aware of this, but now I am. Now that I'm going through the process of getting the construction certificate, it looks like I'm up for about another $12,000 to $15,000 in consultant fees to get the construction certificate, including architect, structural, hydraulic. Yep, and that's not even including council contributions and bonds. I'm a little annoyed at myself that I didn't actually know what I'd have to go through this extra process for construction certificate. But does this sound like normal fees to your construction certificate? Yes, it does. And you know what? John Bone has put together a feasibility study, which would have, if you've, those people that get their head around the feasibility study, and the feasibility study is available in on bonus material. So just let me go there. In the bonus materials tab, you will scroll down underneath all the webinars. You will have growth, cash flow, feasibility software training session. And you watch that session, and at the end of that session, there is a email address to send John an email, and you can get the feasibility sent out to you. Now, those people that get their head around the feasibility study realize that there's extra costs that they wouldn't have taken into consideration when they're doing their feasibilities. And, you know, that it is what it is. You know, these are this experiences, because some of these things here, what you're talking about in consulting fees, some councils in Victoria, for example, will do them for you. Most of the country, though, won't. And you don't know these things. We don't, you know, the experience of this deal for you, Pierre, will set you up for life. I know that, and you're still making money. You're making good money out of this deal, right? For me, I actually had to lose $300,000 to make sure I was going to make a gain. So, you know, yeah, it's great. So, yes, Pierre, there is extra costs, and it does sound about right, but I would also be getting 4 or 5 different quotes from hydraulic engineers and consultants all over the place, because some of them will just rip you blindly. Yes, the webinar will be recorded, and it will be up on the website in a few days. With a commercial property without money, didn't the bank want deposit? Normally they ask 30%. Because the student had lifted the rent another $70,000, it had increased in commercial property when you've got locked in tenancies and leases, it increases the price of the property. So he's actually increased the price of the property. So the property value was at actually $3.6 million, I think it was, by the time that he'd lifted the rents up to $310,000. Would you be kind to share some strategies that work for you to generate positive cash flows? We do small unit developments. We sell off part of it. We pay down debt, and that turns it into positive cash flow, because when you've got low loan to value ratio, it means that you don't have as much interest, and you get that. We've got a couple of beautiful little resi-mercial properties, so the shop downstairs with units upstairs and behind. We've got some boarding houses happening. We've moved into some motels that we're building. We've got Sydney, we've got a couple of boarding houses going on, you know, so they're all varied and different. But mostly our bread and butter deal is build some units, sell part of them off, take the profit, pay down the debt technically, so the technical debt is low, but then I redraw. So if I've got a 50% LVR, I then redraw up to 80% and take it to the next deal for investment. And the next deal has to pay for the interest. So that's generally what we do. List of these in downloads under additional contacts. Yes, so in the download section, you've got a whole list of additional contacts that there is a tab here that if you look at the top, you've got downloads, and in there you've got a whole list of additional contacts that are in there. All right, Darian, we have 300K in equity and aim to passive income of 50 in 12 months. Could you please let us know about strategies? I think I've done that already, Tony. Have you always gone to all your properties to view prior to purchase? Can one buy off the picks on the net, or are other ways to buy physically seeing it? Oh, Jane, if you're willing to take that risk, go for your life. But I have seen every property that I've bought. You know, what I have done is there's at times where I've put I take New South Wales out of this. If I'm buying New South Wales, I'm going to see the property before I put a contract on. In the rest of the country, I will put a contract on the property, and I might ask someone to go out and have a look at it before I go unconditional on that property. Before I'm tied into that property for good, I will see it. So I would suggest you not buy it sight unseen. Moreton Bay Council, yeah. With Moreton Bay Council, for the ancillary building or the granny flats, you need to talk to a private town planner. You can ask the duty planner at council, but they will only answer the questions you ask them. So sometimes you don't know what to ask. What knowledge do you have around how many separate people you can rent it on a shared basis in New South Wales without being a boarding house? I have plenty of knowledge, but I'm not going to tell you. Again, that's going to be something you're going to need to research. I don't want to be the one that has misinformed someone and then I get sued because I've recorded on a webinar how many people you can go out there. There's plenty of information around boarders and lodgers and room sharing in New South Wales on the net. And you can also look it up on their Office of Fair Trading website. For me, boarding houses in New South Wales is the state government has given some great rules and laws around them. So it's a good thing to go into if you think you can do it. From Pierre, I'm looking to get an option on one or more properties that are being rezoned by the aim of selling off the option after the rezoning takes effect. But I just found out that New South Wales, you'll still be liable to pay stamp duty on the full contract price as if you bought it to yourself. Not sure if I missed it, this info in Dipner's info, but this was a bit of a shock to me. Is there a way around this so that I'm only paying stamp duty on the option fee? Yes, there is. I'm not sure if the Franks have a FAQ that would answer that. Essentially, what you're going to be paying stamp duty on is the fee of the stamp duty. I'm sorry, the fee, the option fee. So you're selling the option, and whatever you're selling the option for is the stamp duty. So what Dipner talks about is the option fee versus a deposit in advance. So there's a lot of information around that. Can I answer that? No, not categorically. And what you can do, your coach is telling you to go to the Office of State Revenue in New South Wales and ask that information there. Again, you've got some legal people that Pacific Law could put you onto in New South Wales that can answer that question. So I don't believe that that's correct. An option, you're not going to pay on the full purchase price. They can't double dip on you for stamp duty because they can't charge you for stamp duty and also charge the person that's buying it stamp duty as well. Ian, would it be a good strategy to buy a three-bedroom house and install a three-bedroom extension above? Well, that's a $64 question. Where, how, why, you know, where is it? What's the rent and return? What's the vacancy rates? So, you know, there's lots of information around that that you haven't given me. So is it a good strategy? Well, depends where you are. Is it legal? Well, it depends where you are. Again, so you need to knuckle down and have a good look at the due diligence around that. Hi, and how do you get on with land tax as you have many properties? Well, I pay it. There's no way around it. You pay it. Land tax is land tax. It doesn't matter. The end of the day, as long as you're paying, you know, I don't, people say, oh, what about land tax? Well, I go, well, yeah, what about depreciation? It's a two-way street, this thing, you know. So, yes, I pay land tax, and yes, I still have a passive income. So, you know, you want to be a property investor. That's one of the things that happens with property investors. You've got to pay tax. So it is what it is. You know, just enjoy the benefits like your coach is telling me here. Enjoy the benefits of the rent coming in rather than the benefits of the tax that you have to pay. It is what it is. You know, so let's be happy. You're getting rent coming in. Michael, your coach is also saying in Victoria there is full stamp duty on lease options. So there is a way of structuring that in Victoria that will help you out with that. All right, my throat is just about done, so I'm going to close the webinar for the night. I hope everyone had some answers that enlightened them and they learned something tonight. Remember that you can send questions to questions@realestatesuccess.com.au. That's questions@realestatesuccess.com.au. And thank you for all of those thanking me. Have a good night.